Is it Mr. Mendenhall?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. You may approach.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning to all of you.
Mark Mendenhall, on behalf of the Metropolitan Utilities District of Omaha, may it please the Court. I appreciate the time that you've all given me this morning that I can tell you about the matter that has been argued down to the jury twice, that has been in front of the lower court appeals last year, and why I believe that at the most recent trial from a year ago, actually just a couple days ago, August 2015, that the trial court erred, and why I would ask this court to respectfully remand the matter for a third trial, or in the alternative, why this court should issue a directed verdict or remand the matter for a directed verdict to the trial court. This case began, if I can briefly touch on some of the facts, it's so fact-specific, and I think that these are important to touch on here. It began from a promotional decision that MED made in March of 2010 for a position entitled the Supervisor of Field Engineering, a position that supervised approximately 17 individuals doing several different jobs out in the field, either utility locating or inspecting construction projects done by MED crews. The position was open in January of 2010. Stephanie Han, MED's Director of Plan Engineering, was the decision maker, essentially, and she made the decision to promote an individual, a male, David Strobley, after reviewing. There were 11 total applicants for the position. Of those 11, there were 8 men, 3 women. All 3 women were witnesses in this trial and had been able to testify as to their own beliefs or concerns related to why they didn't receive the promotion. Ultimately, though, Ms. Henn had testified that the decision that she made to promote David Strobley was largely based upon her supervision of Mr. Strobley over the prior 5 years. And it's also important to note that she had also supervised the plaintiff in this, the appellee, Ms. Christina Hartley, for approximately 7 years. And over that period of time, she had been able to ascertain Ms. Hartley's strengths and Ms. Hartley's weaknesses, and why she, Steph Henn, felt that Ms. Hartley wasn't the best candidate to supervise 17 individuals. She had concerns over Ms. Hartley's abilities to stay calm in complex or pressured situations, to be a calm, even field leader, to be able to handle projects out in the field that would then, in turn, make Ms. Henn's job easier. And one of the things that was discussed in front of this jury, well, in front of both juries again, so it was tried in November of 2013, which resulted in a verdict in favor of MED. That was appealed and remanded back for an August 2015 trial, which resulted in a verdict in favor of Ms. Hartley, to which I'm here today. The two main points I wanted to touch on, again, with my remaining time here this morning, is that I believe the trial court erred in excluding evidence that I believe, and my argument would be that the evidence was both rational, probative, and material to the reasons that Ms. Henn gave, namely those concerns that Ms. Hartley had issues communicating and that might transcend to the communications that she would have with her 17 subordinates, or that Ms. Hartley might have issues with making decisions out in the field, which was a critical element of that supervisory position. We had attempted to offer testimony of 2 co-workers that had sat in on weekly team meetings. Ms. Henn would run weekly team meetings for this crew of individuals that she supervised, Ms. Hartley being one of those, and over those weekly team meetings, she would see and hear Ms. Hartley's behaviors. And
was this post-promotion?
The weekly team meetings were certainly pre-promotion and ran post-promotion. And then Mr. Veloradsky, who ascended into Ms. Henn's position as Ms. Henn was promoted, He also testified to weekly team meetings that he ran, again, pre-promotion. But yes, the behaviors that the two witnesses would have spoke to would have been post-promotion. And in that, I think...
Didn't the court have a general take on that, that nobody was going to offer post-promotion evidence in this case because it didn't consider it relevant?
That's true.
And so I treated the plaintiffs the same way.
Well, the plaintiff did open the door to one issue on post-promotion in a discussion that she had on a redirect of Ms. Henn, again, the decision maker, where, and I think it's important to touch on that this is all about habits or behaviors or biases. So we're not talking about one particular moment in time that makes that decision from the trial court relevant here. And so what Ms. Hartley was asking Ms. Henn on redirect, and I believe you'd find it in page 737 of the Bill of Exceptions, was a discussion regarding a 2011 promotion of another female, Ms. Polito. And the insinuation was that Ms. Hartley was attempting to assert that after the promotion, you're still not promoting women. Well, in fact, so she asked those questions of Ms. Henn. Ms. Henn said, no, I hired Melissa. And then she continues on that I had never interviewed Melissa. This is Ms. Henn speaking. I had never interviewed Melissa until 2011. Again, the promotional decision was approximately March of 2010. And so here is the plaintiff attempting to assert this bias that the decision maker has against women from a 2011 decision.
Counsel, can we tell from the offer of proof what Mr. Blackwell and Mr. Johnson would have said had they been permitted to testify?
I believe that the offer of proof would have demonstrated that Mr. Blackwell and Mr. Johnson both had been in the senior engineering technician plant position, the same position that Ms. Hartley was in after the promotional decision was made, that they both sat in on those weekly team meetings and that they would have been able to testify as to their observations of Ms. Hartley's behaviors. In addition to, Ms. Hartley had made several claims throughout her questioning that she had supervised other individuals and that she's got the supervisor experience. I believe that both Mr. Blackwell and Mr. Johnson would have been able to discuss that as well. And really, I think then the question is, was that appropriate for the jury here? Isn't that the trier of fact's job to render this decision on the credibility of the witnesses?
Who determines whether the plaintiff has sustained her burden? You're arguing you should have had a directed verdict because there was no evidence that this promotion was gender-based?
Right. And on that topic, yes. So what I would argue there would be under the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting analysis.
Well, but it's the plaintiff has the burden of proof by preponderance of the evidence.
Yes, sir.
And so we're at that stage. You're saying that the plaintiff never offered any evidence that would rebut your claim that your promotion was not pretextual, or your reasons were not pretextual?
Essentially, yes, because I think what they need to show, the case law says that they need to show, is they need to show that the reasons given by the employer, not only were they false, were they pretextual, but that the real reason was discriminatory intent, that this gender or race or age or whatever the intent might have been, and in this case gender would have been the
real
reason.
Do they have to show these are false statements?
That they have to show that the reasons were false, yes. And to that point, what I wanted to mention there was that she admitted two of the reasons. There were two concerns that Steph Henn had that she spoke about. One was a 2008 incident where she had an argument with Ms. Hartley in front of a group of individuals. And from that argument, it stuck with Ms. Henn that this individual is going to essentially tell me how to do my job in front of my subordinates. And that's going to stick with me. Ms. Hartley admitted that occurred. So that's one of the reasons that the plaintiff admitted occurred. And the other reason was that Ms. Henn was concerned about Ms. Hartley's utility locating struggles. Ms. Hartley, again, admitted that she didn't like to utility locate, but she tries to explain that there were reasons behind it.
Well, so, you bring this up now, but the person that was promoted had three or two hits in the last 3.5 years.
Right.
And Mrs. Hartley had none.
Right.
Were they both performing locating skills during their job at the time they applied for this position?
Yes.
So how could you say that Ms. Hartley's skills were lesser than Mr. Strobel's skills when he had two hits in the last 3.5 years and she had none?
Right. I don't think that it was a quantifiable who was better at it, but I think that Ms. Henn's concern was
doesn't that provide evidence that she was just as good or better than Strobel in doing this?
No, because I think that the real issue there is Ms. Hartley's, I guess, complaints about a responsibility that she has for that job, and that those complaints stick with the decision maker. If you're going to continually complain about a portion of your job, then that's one of the reasons I'm not going to give you that job. If she admits that, then she's not proving the falsity of that reason. I see I'm out of time, so I respectfully request this court to remand with instructions as pursuant to my brief. And again, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you very much. Ms. Schiffer-Miller, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. I'm Joy Schiffer-Miller. I'm here on behalf of Ms. Hartley with respect to this case.
What's the strongest evidence that the refusal to promote was pretextual?
Well, I think the strongest evidence that the reason was pretextual is because they promoted a man who didn't even have the minimum educational requirements for the job over Ms. Hartley, who had a 4-year preferred degree, and in addition to that, had more experience of a relevant nature in her job. She had worked in the same job as Mr. Strobley for 15 years compared to his 4.5 or 5 years. And in addition to that, she had more seniority with the district, and she was doing a better job with locating. And there's a letter where Ms. Henn simply says, Mr. Strobley is the best qualified person for this job. And the evidence is to the contrary.
What's the quantum of proof that the complainant needs to demonstrate pretextual to keep the case going?
We have to show that either they have to first articulate a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for the promotion, which in this case, Ms. Henn has consistently articulated that he was better qualified than any of the three women that all appear to be better qualified than him.
What about apparently some evidence that your client was loud or not easy to work with? I'm just generalizing. Was not some evidence put on to that effect?
Ms. Henn did try to claim that my client spoke more than she listened, and she over-talked people at the meetings. But I will say that there was evidence also presented by people sitting at those meetings through James Starry and also Mr. Strobley, who attended those meetings, and both of them rebutted that testimony. So even though Ms. Henn said that she talked more than she listened, we submit that there was evidence to the contrary.
So that gets me back to my initial question, both to you and opposing counsel, but as I understood it, opposing counsel said that you all had to prove that the explanations, quote, pretext, are false. Is that the law?
We do have to show that.
Or do you need to put on some proof that they may be false?
We have to show that that there is reason to believe that the fact finder could disbelieve that those are the true reasons.
Could be disbelieved.
They could be disbelieved.
Well, ultimately, you have to show by a preponderance of the evidence that gender was a reason for the promotion.
That's correct.
You don't have to show it was the sole reason.
That's correct.
So ultimately, once you have established your prima facie case and the state's then offered evidence to rebut that, then you're really back to square one and simply a case of who proves by the preponderance of the evidence whether or not there was a pretext or not a pretext for the promotion.
A motivating factor was gender.
Yeah.
That's the burden. And the jury instruction and the law is that the reason that they have given being a pretextual reason is sufficient evidence to for the jury to determine whether or not the gender was actually the reason.
As I understand it, your claim that the pretextual reason was that Mr. Strobley was better qualified than all the other applicants.
Exactly. Now, in Mr. Mendenhall's argument before this court, he brings out two little discrete elements. This little deal that happened between Ms. Hinn and Ms. Hartley in 2008, and therefore maybe Ms. Hartley held that against, or Ms. Hinn, I'm sorry, held it against my client because my client questioned, you know, where were you? I have a $1 million project I'm working on, and I needed your input, and I couldn't find you, and no one knew where you were. And Mr. Mendenhall is arguing, well, that's the reason she didn't promote her. But if you look at the exhibits in this case, the letter that she wrote promoting does not say anything about the 2008 incident. And then in addition to that, they bring up this locating situation and how my client consistently would say, you know, when I began in my position, they didn't want me to do the locating function because it draws my attention away from the inspection function that I'm supposed to be doing to make sure that the contractors are installing the pipe properly. And if I'm drawn away by them saying, hey, I need you to come over and locate, then it's not a good idea for me to do that, Ms. Hinn, because if I do that, they can then do other things and not properly install the pipe. And so my client had brought that up as a concern to Ms. Hinn. I think it's important to know that Ms. Hinn has never located, Mr. Veloradsky had never located, and people on up the chain had never located. While Ms. Hartley located, Mr. Strobley located, Ms. Chevalier located, Ms. Meisinger had located in the past. I mean, all the people, to try to say, well, I didn't give her this promotion because she admits that she's weak in locating, when the person, the man that they promoted in this case, actually had two locate hits in the last 3.5 years, you know, certainly there's a question of fact as to whether or not her locating experience or her not wanting to locate was the true reason for denying her a promotion over a man who has less experience, not even the experience Ms. Hartley had, has not sufficient education for this position, it flies in the face of reality, which is why the first case got reversed.
And at this point, then, your comments go to overcoming the pretextual, quote-unquote, explanation.
Right.
And you move to the jury, and
that's what
and
we
that
did.
Renders the outcome.
In fact, I think there might have been a question about whether or not there was sufficient evidence to even direct a verdict for the plaintiff in this case. I mean, there is such a lack of evidence of Mr. Strobley's educational requirements and also all of the other things.
As in failure to put on the right quantum of proof with respect to pretext.
Well, to question whether or not that's a legitimate non-discriminatory reason. Because, as I said, their legitimate non-discriminatory reason is that he was better qualified. And to pick out what I would point out to the court is a personality style, which not only did they say Ms. Hartley lacked a calm, even-keeled demeanor, they said another woman, Ms. Chevalier, also lacked a calm, even-keeled demeanor, and that's why those two women were excluded from promotion.
Counsel, I want to be clear on what you're arguing. Are you saying demeanor is not part of qualifications?
Well, I think demeanor can be part of qualifications,
okay. But
I think when the evidence all shows that we only talk about demeanor when it relates to women who are, I submit, better qualified. I mean, when you only talk about demeanor of women and to the exclusion of talking about the demeanor of the men. In fact, if you look at the notes of the interviews in this case, there's a note while Ms. Hinn is interviewing Ray Goldsberry, who was a man, and in her notes, she says, blah, 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 blah. That's what she wrote down in her notes about Mr. Goldsberry. She didn't comment that he didn't have a calm, even-keeled demeanor or that he talked more than he listened. Why do we say that about women?
What if Ms. Hinn had said that the reason she didn't promote Ms. Hartley was that she didn't like her?
Would
you have a case of discrimination? And then she said, because she talks over at meetings, she interrupts people, and I don't like the way she does things.
If she said she didn't like her and said it was because of really articulable reasons, mm-hmm. I suppose that might be a different story. But in this case, she lumps her in with another woman and says both of them don't have calm, even-keeled demeanor, which, you know, she didn't
your argument was based on the fact that her reason given was that Mr. Strobley was more qualified.
Yes.
And that's the pretext?
It is the pretext, because he's obviously not more qualified. I would submit also, Your Honor, that if a part of the reason she doesn't like her is because she's a woman.
Well, that's of course, that would sustain.
That would also enter in. So then we would have that argument. But I think as a matter of law that MUD did not make a proper offer of proof in this case, because they didn't say that either of those gentlemen would come to court and testify that as of on thus and such a date, they witnessed Ms. Hartley saying thus and such at a meeting that they were involved in. So I submit that the evidence, the jury got it right in this case. The appellant has failed to carry any burden of proof to show that they should, that it should be reversed. I see I'm out.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I do not believe there's any time for rebuttal. So we go on to the next case of the day, which is In Re Interest of Alec S.